Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the church today.
Hello and welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm your host, John Ehlers. I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Orpington, Kent, which is a southeastern suburb of London. I'd love to invite you to come and join us for worship services at 10:30 a.m. each Sunday morning for the Divine Service, or Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m. for the service of Vespers. We also have a mission down in Raynham in the Medway Towns in Kent. We meet the first Sunday of each month at 3 p.m. on Aylesford Road. So if you live in Raynham or the Medway Towns, please do come and join us. I'm also vacancy pastor for St. Columba Lutheran Church in East Kilbride, Scotland, and work with the Edinburgh Mission up there as well. And if you live in the Glasgow area, come and pay him a visit. I know you'll be blessed. And if you live in Edinburgh, give us a shout and we'll let you know when the mission is meeting. If you don't live in any of those areas, go to our website, lutheran.co.uk, click on the directory button, find the church closest to where you live, pay him a visit. I know you will be blessed. Also like to thank you for your prayerful and your financial support of Lutheran Radio, for without your prayers and without your gifts, we wouldn't be able to carry on the work that we do, and we are extremely grateful to you for your support. Today, we're very pleased to welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor, Flame. He is a Lutheran rap artist from the United States, and we are going to talk about his music and his ministry, and it is a joy to have you with us. Thanks, Flame, for joining us.
Yes, indeed. Thank you all for having me.
I suppose, can we start from the beginning? There's never a better place to start than the beginning. Can you tell us maybe a little bit about your childhood, and was church always a part of your life?
Yeah, so I grew up in a household where my parents were informing me about Christianity and helping me see the world through a Christian lens. I will say that my grandmother was probably the strongest influence in my life in terms of Christianity. She would always share Bible stories and personal experiences just in her life between God and her regular experience. So those things were always attractive to me, and I was drawn to her Christ. And, so I grew up with that in my conscience as I moved about throughout the world, but I still wanted to be just a regular kid. I wanted to do the normal stuff that everybody else was doing, kind of fit in a bit. And it wasn't until a little later that I got myself into a lot of trouble. I got kicked out of my high school, had to transfer and go to a new school, got into a tragic accident on the way home from the orientation at this new school. And, man, it was just one of those moments where approaching death. I mean, it was a near-death experience. I just started asking the big questions. Why me? Why did God let this happen? And my grandmother just pointed me towards my creator and Jesus Christ ultimately. So, man, those were special times. And about a week and a half or so after that conversation, she died from her fifth heart attack. And she was only 55 years old. So she was relatively young. And God used that to get me to really hone in on my faith, and that's really where things started for me.
So it's amazing. It sounds like, you know, man, you have to face that tragedy and all those difficult circumstances, yet you look back on it and say God was actually using those things to bring you to Christ.
Yeah, for sure. And even though, you know, the seeds of faith have been planted in me, I really think about that moment at 16 years old as the moment where I just really wanted to lay hold of my faith in this new way and to express it and to think more deeply about it and to filter it through everything that I was doing, my artistic expression, my morality, my lifestyle. So that's the moment where I kind of went public, if you will. And I even started to write music about my faith then. And I give my grandmother credit for inspiring me to use my interest in music to not just listen to mainstream music that was pretty degrading to women, disrespectful to authority in many ways, and contrary to a Christian worldview. She told me, man, if you really like that rap music stuff, why don't you study your schoolwork and write music about it? That way, when you go to school and you take tests, you'll have the answers in your lyrics. And I thought, man, that's genius. So I credit her with my style of music even to this day. Edutainment is what I like to call it.
That's brilliant. Thank God for grandmas. Now, You talk about your artistic flavor. Let's spend a minute there as well. I mean, most kids love music. I grew up listening to radio and records. I still love music. So what sort of influences did you have when you were young? And when did you think, man, that's something I could really do and something I'm actually reasonably good at?
Yeah, for sure. I remember the soundtrack to my childhood was hip hop rap music. So that was the air that I breathed. I mean, everybody around me was listening to it. It was really just the style of music that communicated the nature of our existence in that community. And it told the stories. I mean, the rappers functioned as the philosophers of the day, the poets of the day. And so we just sort of tuned in as kids. And then as I was drawn to that, I was like, man, I want to communicate life from my vantage point, from my perspective. And so that led me to put my hand to the pen and the pad myself. I also played the cello and the tenor saxophone for 10 years. So I kind of threw myself into it. It was just an experience that allowed me to sort of disappear and to be engulfed in this other world and sort of escape. So I really enjoyed music for that reason. But then, as I mentioned, I wanted to include content that would make people think and to consider. So that's, the joy really in being able to now be a Christian rap artist and to share my Christian worldview, which is, rap music is rhythm and poetry. That's what it stands for. And so I love that those things coming together.
And I mean, well, that's the model that the church has used from its beginning is music conveys the message.
Absolutely. I love the big homie Martin Luther. He talked about, music is really second to theology. It's only second to theology in terms of communicating God's word. I think it's just a unique format. You can put, especially music with lyrics on top, you can inculcate, you can repeat a message over and over in a short span of time. And just that repetition allows it to stick in your memory. You can recall it when you need to. It has the ability to change your mood, to redirect your thoughts. So I think it's a true gift from God, a means of grace, so to speak, as we just deal with life here below.
Indeed. And you mentioned you were 16 or thereabouts when you started thinking, man, I'm going to write about Christ and who he is and what he's done for me. Can you tell us how that sort of started and how maybe you got involved with the music industry?
It was interesting because I had heard of Christian rap before. I remember as a kid, some local church ministry got all the addresses to the apartments and the houses and the projects and sent out a cassette tape. So this is throwback. Sent out a cassette tape of a Christian rap group and they just had this song. And, it wasn't that good, but I appreciated the effort. So, fast forward when I was around 16, I was like, man, I wonder if that Christian rap stuff is still around. So I went to the Christian bookstore and I asked the person working there and they told me that there was a section, just designated to Christian rap. So I went there, pulled off of the shelf a bunch of CDs. I started popping them in a radio player. And I was like, man, this is an entire movement. And it was kids like myself who were from the inner city and they were telling similar stories, but just through a Christian worldview. So I felt like I felt at home. And I just used it to share my faith. I used it as inspiration. But it was one particular group by the name of Cross Movement that I was really impressed by because they were very teachy, very theological and systematic and breaking down theology. So I was really drawn to that. And long story short, I got a chance to, after being a fan, to drive to a nearby concert, probably 5 hours from my hometown. And I got to meet them in person. My friends gave them one of my demos, which is just a demo CD with my music on it. And they gave me a call. And that's where it all started. It was pretty surreal.
So were you still in your teens when that happened?
By that point, yes, I was, I was somewhere around 19, about to turn 20. And, so it was really a dream come true to meet them in person because I had just been listening to their music and there was this new invention called the internet. that had just came on the scene. And I went to their place called The Website, and I saw they had devotionals and, you know, concert footage. And so I was able to sort of peer into their lives behind the scenes, not only just be a fan of the music, but to see them just regularly in life and how they were living out their faith and encouraging young artists and young Christians in general to stand firm in the faith, to pursue purity in their lives. So to meet them in person after a couple of years or so of just being a fan from a distance, man, it was a dream come true. So for them to call me after hearing my demo, to establish a friendship over the phone, I mean, my goodness, it was unbelievable. And they really gave me my first shot as a national artist. So my first four albums came out under their imprint. So I like to always tip my hat to Cross Movement for giving me a shot at that time.
Brilliant. So when all of this was going on, am I correct in assuming, I'm just sort of gathering from some of your lyrics, that you were involved in a Calvinist church, or was that later as you were beginning your musical career?
So while I was learning about Cross Movement up close and personal, they started to ask me more questions about my theology. And they asked me, was I a Calvinist or an Arminian? And at that time, I'm like, I'm not in a gang. I just represent Jesus. I don't know either one of those guys. And they were like, no, it's not a gang. These are two theological camps that sort of summarize the nature of Christian history. And I was like, I have no clue of either one of those camps. And so they began to spend time sort of teaching and exposing me to the Reformation and some of those ideas. So that pushed me to think a little deeper about that. And at the time, the way they presented it, those were the only two options. So as they, you know, I guess over 2 months span, a part of the story that I left out was eventually I went on tour with them. So now we're on the road for about 2 months, and they're just regularly doing devotionals and teaching us about the Reformation, Martin Luther, and ultimately John Calvin. So by the time I left the tour, I went back home and sort of went through a crisis, if you will, just having to be confronted with the things I learned on the tour. Now I'm back home. I don't have the same reinforcement of these ideas that I did on tour. So I was sort of confused. I felt trapped. I didn't know if I was being deceived at the church home that I was at. And yeah, that was a pretty trying time. But I think in that moment is when I decided, man, I better become Calvinist if it's the true exposition of scripture. And I gave myself to it. I was the extreme version. I was a 5-point Calvinist, and I just began to write music about it and export it all throughout the world. And that lasted for about 18 years.
Okay. And I'm guessing during that time you cut quite a few albums.
Yeah, so I put out 9 albums, just, you know, teaching Calvinism explicitly, the implications of Calvinism practically. And, you know, God was faithful to use, you know, two fish and five loaves. I think there were things within that construct of thinking that were helpful, in particular for teens and young 20-year-olds who primarily, like myself, were a part of denominations that were prosperity driven, the extreme versions of charismatic thought. So, you know, though we did use our minds, by and large, there was a lot of emotionalism and sort of a lot of enthusiasm, sort of trying to sense what God is saying in the spirit, or sense what God is saying, you know, in this internal voice. And so it was, Calvinism was helpful in that it took us a bit of outside of our head, outside of our emotions, and made us think deeper about scripture. So that was a good contribution, but then there's some unhealthy ideas that sort of linger in that space that eventually began to take the oxygen out the room, if you will. And it was sort of suffocating. And that's when I began to ask more questions and sort of hit a fork in the road at that point.
Okay. So that brings me then to the question. Okay. How then did you become a Lutheran? Did you stumble onto it, or yeah, what was the scoop there?
Yeah, I like to call it a divine fluke. I had no plans on becoming Lutheran. In fact, I didn't know what Lutheranism was. At the church home that I started at 16 years old, I remember my youth pastor made mention of Martin Luther King Jr. had been named after this German monk by the name of Martin Luther. And so as a 16-year-old, I remember hearing that, but I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't have a particular context for German culture, for the person Martin Luther. It was sort of, it felt kind of irrelevant. I thought it was kind of cool, but at the same time, I didn't know what to do with the information. So fast forward, so now I'm sort of back in this second crisis in my spiritual journey, if you will. And in that moment, at that low point, a friend of mine randomly reached out to me and he said, "Hey, man, I know you're probably like me thinking about going back to seminary." And he was at a Baptist seminary in California here in the States. And his Baptist professor recommended this Lutheran seminary in my hometown, Concordia Seminary. He said to my friend, "I think if you want to continue your studies, you should go to Concordia. I think you'll get a more robust experience in terms of church history." So he's sharing that with me. And I thought, man, I think I know where that school is. So I'll probably just schedule a time to visit the campus. And so I did that. And I got a chance to tour the campus with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Bodie. Great guy. But it was funny because the entire tour, I'm just talking his head off about John Calvin, how John Calvin saved Christianity and John Calvin this, John Calvin that. And he just humored me, just letting me go on and on about John Calvin. And eventually he did, you know, sort of break up in the party, so to speak, and let me know this was a Lutheran institution. And I still didn't know what that meant because in my mind, Calvin and Luther were pretty lockstep. I almost thought they were kind of like the same person, if you will. But yeah, I got a chance to sit in one of the classes and with Dr. Sanchez. He was talking about the Trinity. I was drawn to that. I love the Germanic style of the campus. I was like, I think I can thrive here. And so then it was time to test into the master's program, the graduate program. And I got the books. I had to study to get into the school. And that's when it all started. I said, OMG, what in the world are they talking about? Baptismal regeneration. The Lord's Supper is not just a symbol. And that was a moment where I said, huh, what am I going to do? I'm at another fork in the road.
So you've reached this point. How old are you at this time?
At that point, I was probably somewhere around 30. Ish, somewhere in that space. Yeah, so it was a lot later in life. Okay. Again, after 18 years of being a Calvinist, you know, I'm in it. I live it. It's, I have relationships in that space that have been cultivated for nearly 20 years by that point. And, yeah, so a lot was at stake in terms of registering for this seminary, in terms of thinking deeply about these ideas, taking them seriously, pondering them, and deciding whether or not I was going to go public with the things I was learning, because now I've developed a career around these ideas. So, you know, it involves my financials. It involves, you know, true relationships that I have. So it was a lot at stake. So my prayer was just, Lord, give me the courage to continue to explore, to see if this is in the text. And if it is, give me the humility to go with the scriptures and give me the courage to be who I am privately in public and let the chips fall where they may and hold me up. That was my prayer.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you probably thought, oh man, it's a struggle. Should I leave? Should I stay? But I know that in your albums, you often talk about Extranos, and I'm guessing that's one of the reasons why you may have stayed around. Can you tell us what that term means? Because I most people wouldn't know the Latin anymore. And why that was such an important factor for you.
So Extranos, is a Latin phrase, as you mentioned, and it means outside of us. And the reason why that it rang in my ears, it rang in my heart. Because a part of the Calvinistic construct is this idea that Jesus did not die for everyone without exception. They argue that he died for all types of people, meaning all kinds of people from every nation, every tongue, every tribe, but not every individual without exception. So with that thought sort of in the bloodstream, and then there's the second thought that they teach, which says that God created some people, particularly, specifically for hell, for judgment, so that he can glorify his wrath. That's their purpose of existing, so that he can be seen in his wrath as being mighty. So those two ideas in the bloodstream, if you're doing good, they really don't bother you. They don't really show up anywhere. But if you're not doing good, if you're struggling in your faith, if you're struggling with a particular sin, or if you feel, you know, insecure about your standing with God, maybe you're not reading your Bible as much as when you first became a Christian. Maybe you're not sharing your faith as regularly as you once did as a, you know, as a younger teen when you felt that zeal. In those moments, you begin to question, man, am I one of the ones Jesus died for? What if I'm one of the people he created for judgment? And that sort of deep insecurity where you, again, you look within yourself to find something sincere. You're doing these deep dives in your affections, and you're navel gazing to see how genuine you are, how genuine you were. You're trying to measure your level of commitment. And it's really a moving target, because the target is relative to your own thinking, is relative to the pastor and his particular bents and standards that he preaches across the pulpit. The target moves depending on what podcast you're listening to, what authors you're reading. So it's an impossible thing to hit the bullseye. And again, it just sends you inside. So when I kept hearing this phrase, extra nose, outside of us, I said, man, this sounds like something I need to explore, because I find in it hope. It's like these flickering lights of hope in a darkness, and it builds up my curiosity to want to know more about it. So that's what I discovered at Concordia Seminary at the time. Was it felt like God was paving more road for me to walk down, and I just took baby steps as I found more and more road paved, and that's how I ended up in the space I am now.
And you have an album. Sorry, I'm showing my age here. Are they still called albums? but I think you have an album called Extra Nose, where you kind of detail your journey. And was that done at the seminary, or was that after you had finished your education? And how was that received by your Calvinist friends?
Man, so while I was at seminary, I did not speak in class. Rarely, if I even opened my mouth, I wanted to sit and soak. So I took notes profusely. I almost transcribed word for word everything each professor said. I recorded each lecture with my cell phone on a voice memo. Every day after class, I would literally listen to the entire lecture of each class again every day. And, so even after I graduated in 2018, I took 2019 as well. So I took, you know, the remainder of 2018 and then all of 2019 to go through my notes and to slowly work through everything, to pray, to ask questions of people that I trusted outside of the academic environment, because I knew I was getting the best answers in school. I'm with the brightest minds. They know Greek. They know Hebrew. They've been thinking through these things a lot longer than I have. So I wanted to sort of work through it outside of that environment, to not be under that influence. So I didn't even write music. I just took time off to slowly work through everything. And then eventually, somewhere towards the end of 2019, I tried my hand at it. I was like, man, I don't even know how to rap this stuff. So I tried my hand at it. Some of the songs would never see the light of day, because they're hideous. They're not good. But eventually, Extra Nose, the EP, the project, it developed. It came out, and I released it to the public. I felt good about it. I felt like I was clear in the things I wanted to say. I didn't want to say too much, so I put out a short project, which is, you know, what an EP is. And man, the reception at first, it was stunned silence. I think People were caught off guard. They didn't know what to say. It was unfamiliar content because, you know, respectfully, most people in the Calvinistic tradition have not been exposed to the Lutheran Reformation. The way Luther is used in the Calvinistic world, you may visit the bondage of the will and perhaps the 95 theses. And after that, Luther sort of swept under the carpet and you borrow his clout to say, thank God for John Calvin, who continued the Reformation and sort of moved us further away from Rome in a way that Luther failed. So most people didn't have categories of thinking for the content. It was sort of, it put them in a juxtaposition, I feel like. And, so it was stunned silence. And then eventually there was this response of, I think I like this. And I started getting people like Nicodemus in the night, like pastors, professors, seminary presidents, lay leaders, lay persons would reach out to me and say, yo, Flame, this is good. This is interesting. This is deep. I've never considered this. So I really appreciated that kind of response. And then eventually some pushback came. And so that was healthy, too, because it caused me to have to think deeper about how to articulate these things for people outside of the Lutheran tradition. And I would say now it's a healthy blend of curiosity. People are finding hope in it. And then there is good pushback that I think is positive because it shows that people are wrestling. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and that's where I first heard of you was probably 2020. We had a young fella come and worship with us from the Calvinist tradition. He was a rapper here in the UK, still is. And he said, man, have you heard Flame? And I said, no, never heard of this guy before. And he hooked me up with, you know, with some of your stuff. And he said it just absolutely made all the difference in his life because he pointed to that introspection that maybe even the Calvinists would say that's a terrible thing, but that's actually in practice what happens. And he said the weight that put on him was just crushing. He said, but when he heard your, you know, the lyrics that you were doing, what a difference that made to his life. And that's why he wanted to come to a Lutheran church. So well done. Thank you for that. And as I say, it really is even reaching even people over here in the UK. So that's, I think, you know, encourage you, I hope, with that.
To me, that's the reason why I do it. I had a friend of mine. You know, he was sort of discouraged. I think he spent too much time in the comment section somewhere. And he felt like, man, Flame, I just wish, you know, people would listen. And I wanted to encourage him and say, people are, you know, sometimes on social media, you don't get the true story. You don't get the full picture. I said, you know, there are people who are really thankful for the Lutheran tradition. These aren't ideas original to me. I'm just, you know, a microphone just sort of magnifying vocally what's been said already. So to hear you say that is fuel to the fire. And that introspection is dangerous. I do think, in a Calvinistic construct, the way they have sanctification arranged in a room, I like to say you'll walk in a room and stub your toe because it's out of place. And, you know, Lutherans have just done a healthy job with reminding us that it is God who is sanctifying us. He set us apart. He's growing us. He's maturing us. And we bear fruit in keeping with repentance. We, you know, what do the sanctified do? They bear good works. So we ought to try our best. We ought to, you know, work and serve as unto the Lord. But the goal is to do those things for our neighbor and not to get extra credit from God or to try to prove to him that we're very serious and we're very sincere. And that does drain you. It's exhausting. And a lot of people tap out. I mean, I have friends who've left the faith entirely because they've concluded that Christianity is too difficult. And if God expects something close to perfection, if he expects them to ever be progressing and year by year sinning less or turning away from something more and more and sort of chasing this moving target, they've concluded that I can't live up to it. And that's always sad to hear. So I'm praying for people to return. Hopefully they can reimagine God and Christianity himself through the Lutheran articulation.
Yeah. No, thank you for that, because that is the truth. We can do it. But thanks be to God, Jesus did it for us, and we rest in his righteousness. Sadly, Flame, we're out of time, but if you wouldn't mind, that'd be, I think, a great place to start again, if you wouldn't mind joining us next week.
Yes, indeed. Let's do it.
Great. Let's invite our listeners back, and look forward to chatting with you again next week. Thanks again, Flame.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to The Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.